And as we come to our second part, looking at the relationship between our faith and our mental health, we are going to dig a little bit deeper into what happens when it really does all fall apart. And just in case you are tuning in online, and if you are, welcome, or you're here in the room and that you think that Christians are people who've got it all together and all sewn up, I hope that our Bible readings and our time together now shows you that that is not the case, that in our brokenness, sufferings, we find Christ in a new way. And somebody who would testify that that is true in her life is a lovely lady called Katie Cuthbert. She's been part of our church for a few years now. She joined us after the pandemic, and she joins us online faithfully. She's part of our watching community online, and Katie is going to share her story for us now.
Hi, Riverside. For those of you that don't know me, my name's Katie, I'm 34, I live in Kings Norton, and I've been coming to Riverside since October 2022. I've been joining mostly online, so I might not be a particularly familiar face, but I'm really excited to share some of my story with you today, because this is a topic that I'm really passionate about. It's because of my struggles with my mental health and addiction that I found Jesus. I felt like a broken person for as long as I can remember, even as a kid. My first breaking point was at the age of 11. I was diagnosed with depression and anxiety and given medication and counselling. I didn't find that very helpful, but not long after I found my own solution in the form of alcohol. All of a sudden I could cope with life, but alcohol was a double-edged sword. It started to cause more problems than it solved. Over the next 8 years, I followed the same pattern. Lots of alcohol, mental health crises, self-harming and suicide attempts, changing medications that were all just washed down with more alcohol, and I eventually ended up adding drugs to the mix. I desperately wanted to escape this downward spiral, but no matter how hard I tried, I couldn't stop drinking. And then 2 months before my 21st birthday, I finally hit rock bottom. I went to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I found some hope. Here was a group of people who thought like me, felt like me, and had behaved like me. And they told me that I could get better and live a life beyond my wildest dreams. To do that, I had to find a God of my own understanding in order to stay sober. I was encouraged to pray for a sober day each morning and to say thank you for my sobriety each night. And over the next 3 years, I did manage to stay sober one day at a time while searching for God. I did find out then who Jesus was, and I enjoyed reading different parables that I found on Google. Then for the first time, I met an actual Christian in real life, and I started asking lots of questions about Christianity. Life at the time was going pretty well for me. I had a job and I actually had a career path. I was in a relationship and we lived together. I was sober and I was happy, and my mental health was becoming more stable as a result. Unfortunately, 2014 was one of the biggest breaking points of my life. And when I say 2014, I mean the entire year almost. I had two bereavements within 3 weeks of each other. I walked away from my pursuit of Christianity because there's some things that I just couldn't reconcile. I had a complete mental breakdown, started self-harming again, and was hospitalised after another suicide attempt. I turned back to alcohol and drugs for a short period of time. I lost my relationship as a result, and then my home because I had to move out. I couldn't work either, so the job went pretty quickly. And then to top it all off, I was involved in a head-on car crash that is the reason that I am disabled today. The next few years were pretty dark, but eventually I realised that I couldn't live life anymore not knowing who God was. Like, I literally didn't think that I could survive my demons. So in 2017, I decided to explore Christianity again, seriously. And it took about 4 months before I found Jesus waiting for me there. Since giving my life to Jesus, I've found that he is the cornerstone to my well-being. My mental health has been more stable than ever. I still have good days and bad days, but as long as I stay sober and spiritually well, I'm much better able to engage with things like counselling and medication. Without the alcohol, I can spot how I'm feeling before things get really bad, and I now have a whole host of Christian friends who love me and know me and can help me spot the things that I might have missed. I have had one relapse in sobriety since becoming a Christian. It happened during the only time I've ever been angry with God, and I put myself in a dangerous situation as a result. I haven't been angry with God since, because my sobriety is wholly dependent on maintaining that good relationship with God. I go to regular AA meetings, these days on Zoom, which really help. We may have a different idea of who God is, but we have amazing conversations about how our faith has relieved our drinking problem. I'm very open with people about my mental health and addiction, because 9 times out of 10, it encourages the person that I'm talking to share their own struggles. Now, over the years, I've never met anyone who's exactly like me with the same issues and experiences, but I have met many people whose struggles all stem from the same sorts of roots: fear, anger, uncertainty, shame, and so on. When I connect with other people in this way, it stops me from feeling like I'm the only person in the world going through hard times. And today, I do glory in my sufferings in the same way that Paul talks about in Romans 5, verses 3 to 6. Because through my sufferings, I've found life. I don't know if I would have ever seen my need for Jesus if it wasn't for my various struggles. And the very fact that Jesus went to the cross for someone like me, who's done the things that I've done, is something that still takes my breath away. And it's because of that that I'm now living a life beyond my wildest dreams. Thanks for listening to me.
Well, Katie, we hope you're tuning in, and we send all our love and our gratitude for such a beautiful, authentic, heartfelt story. And Katie's is a story of breakdown and breakthrough. And our heart in doing this series is not to leave us in that place of darkness that the psalmist is exploring, but actually to bring into the light some of the things that Katie discussed there, like shame, like fear, like trauma, things that lie hidden sometimes in our heart, in our spirit, that God wants in his grace to bring healing, to bring community to, and to bring breakthrough in his power and in his love. Now, I don't know about you, but I grew up thinking that church was a little bit like this, that it was full of brightly coloured people with perfect lives and great edges, and they all fitted together beautifully like a big jigsaw puzzle. And in my sort of more turbulent youth times, I thought, I am not that. I'm not one of those pieces. I looked at them and I thought, that is not my shape. That is not who I am. And so I distanced myself from faith and church. But I have realised in my years, over the years, that church is much, much more like this. It is broken pieces, shards with sharp edges, that actually the Lord Jesus, in his wisdom and in his love, starts to bring together to make an incredible mosaic. A mosaic of redemption, of healing, and of beauty. And every single one of us here, everyone tuning in online, will have areas of brokenness and sharp edges in our lives. There's a wonderful Japanese art called kintsugi that actually says not only are our sharp edges part of us, they are a beautiful part of us. And what the artists do is they actually join these broken pieces with seams of gold, bringing about healing and beauty. And I love Katie's story because to me, it is such an example of that, such an example of that kind of beautiful healing and redemption. And Kintsugi Hope have been really supportive to us and many, many other churches in looking at our well-being and looking at our mental health. Patrick Regan, who works for Kintsugi Hope, says this: sometimes we are fractured by the choices we make, as Katie said there, and sometimes we are shattered by the things that we would never have chosen, as Katie also said. But our brokenness is also the source of our shared humanity. I think I missed the word there, but it's our shared humanity. That actually, as she said, I didn't think there were people like me, but actually coming into faith community and having friends who could actually love her and get alongside her was hugely helpful and has been hugely helpful to me in my life too. So what do we do when we start to realise that we are heading towards a breakdown? Do we, in fact, even realise it? Because we can start to feel like the psalmist here, that we're spiralling down, that we're going towards something, then perhaps we're powerless to stop it. It could be that we have had trauma in our childhood or in our youth that we haven't processed. Or grief, as Lindsay said earlier, that's pushed down. And actually that can lead to some really quite serious poor mental health in all of our lives if it's unexpressed and not brought into the light. And often, and I think sometimes if I can be cheeky here, Christians are pretty good at this, we mask that trauma. We mask it with a happy face or I'm doing fine, thank you very much. We might have a passing mask that we use. It might be a mask that we switch on for church or for people who know us quite well. But when it gets really dangerous is when that mask becomes a permanent fixture, that almost no one knows the real you, that almost no one really knows the pain that you carry. Because trauma leaves an imprint on us in our nervous system, in our emotions, in our relationships, in our learning, in our bodies. And we at Riverside are not experts in trauma, but we do know people who are. And some of us went on training a couple of years ago, really brilliant training around trauma and what it does to us physiologically and what it can do to us spiritually if we don't bring things into the light. And I just want to say as a caveat here, you need to be gentle in doing that. Because actually some trauma is very serious and we don't want to meddle in that. We want to just pray that God who knows, his spirit who understands, Jesus who prays for us and the experts who are gentle at helping us bring trauma into the light. So we are not the experts, but we can signpost people to the experts and to Jesus in his love and in his understanding. Because Jesus cares about us whether the pain was our fault or someone else's. And as we said last week, and I want to really reiterate that, we have a faith that is based and rooted in grace and forgiveness and mercy. And so we have an advantage if we're believers in Jesus today because we have somewhere to take our shame. We have somewhere to take it to Jesus who knows us, who understands us, who loves us implicitly and longs to help us on this journey. And I have, as I shared last week, watched someone spiralling in mental illness and found myself feeling really, really powerless to know what to do. And I would say that sometimes if you're loving someone or caring for someone around this, it can be almost equally hard. And we would love to pray for you and support you as well if that's you. But how do we know? Well, Lucy Martin in her brilliant book says, This Too Will Pass, says this, a breakdown isn't the beginning of mental illness, it's the publication of it. It's the volcano that has been rumbling away for years, exploding with boiling lava and destroying everything in its path. It has no choice. It was made like that, and people built houses on its slopes, knowing what it was, but hoping that it might not actually erupt. And I think there's so much profoundness, is that a word? If it is, I've just made it up. But there's so much that is profound in that, actually, because we build on ground that actually can be quite unsafe. And actually what God in his beautiful heart for us wants to do is gently bring these things to the surface so that we can experience his wholeness and his love. And as we said last week, and do tune in if you missed last week, because these are kind of two halves in a way, but lament in this psalm that we're looking at, Psalm 33, N.T. Wright says, lament is praise, it's relationship, it's a pathway to intimacy, and a prayer to God to act. And this Psalm 33, I mean, we thought last week's was in trouble, but this week he really is hitting absolutely rock bottom. If you want to look at the Psalm, do open it up on your phone or if you've got your Bible. But he bookends it with faith. He bookends it with faith. He says, God, you're faithful, I trust you. And at the end, he says, my prayer comes before you in the morning. But in the middle, boy, does he go in some on God. He pours out his heart. Let's look at verse 3-4. He says, for my soul is full of trouble. I'm overwhelmed with troubles. My life draws near to death. I'm counted among those who go down to the pit. I am like one without strength. And I am so grateful for the psalmists, aren't you? Because many of us have felt like this, that actually we're spiraling down and we do not know who's got our rope. We do not know. And we can see the pit coming and we think, I'm going to hit it if I don't do something. And that is the point where we can reach out and we should reach out for help and for breakthrough. He's wanting someone to throw him a rope, if you like, but he knows he's going down. And the pit in the Bible is used metaphorically and actually physically for that kind of place of despair. Joseph in the Old Testament is right down in the pit when actually his story starts to change and breakthrough starts to come. The psalmist in many psalms talks about being in the pit, the cords of death entangling him in other places, but actually God in his mercy coming to his rescue. He's going down to the pit and he mentions death many times in this psalm. We can't get away from that. We don't know if he's physically dying or he feels like he is, but it's much more likely to me that he's having suicidal thoughts. And can we just say again that the Bible is full of mental health crises and problems? And if we've denied that in the past or if we've overlooked that, then we apologize, because the Bible is a book, a living word that is full of victory, but actually full of pain. And he's having suicidal thoughts. And many of you, many of us, will have had those suicidal thoughts and ideation. And increasingly in our young people, and even in our older children, that is very, very sadly the case. And can I just commend the Matilda team for just the most glorious production that I witnessed last night, and some of you witnessed. Because what an antidote to poor mental health or to brokenness, to be church in that way, full of love and laughter and supporting each other. One of the most beautiful things in the production for me was seeing each other, seeing them supporting one another as church. And actually, for that time, forgetting the troubles of the world and just being together in joy. Now, I'm a big fan of the creative arts, but I just thought it was a beautiful display of how that can lift us out of our situations. And there's been a lot of talk even this week about children on their phones and children being isolated. What a wonderful antidote to that, to actually say, no, this is children putting down their phones and having courage and getting together and performing with each other with great joy. So well done to all the team for that. But here he is struggling with these thoughts of death and really, really spiraling down. And as I shared last week, I can be a fixer and that can be a problem for people. And I know that I am working with it, trying to change in that area. But I think the problem is we sometimes want quick results, don't we? And we want to fix people because we love them and we want to rescue them and we want to tell them all the good things. And I learned in my suicide prevention training, which I felt as a pastor, it was really important for me to do, that I was doing it wrong, because I was saying, you've got all these reasons to live. You've got a lovely family. You're gorgeous. You're talented. You've got this going on. You've got that going on. Why are you, brilliant? And they know all that. So I was heaping shame almost onto them by saying, you've got all that and you still feel like this. And actually what the advice was, and it was very good advice, and I have revised my ways of working, is to be with people into that. To say, have you made a plan of that? Have you thought how that would happen for you? So that we can immediately signpost them towards really good professional help and prayer. Professional help and prayer. The first time I saw someone in a suicidal state, I did not realise that I could call an ambulance. It just didn't occur to me that I could dial 999, but that is exactly what I should have done, because it is a health crisis. I also prayed, and that person Came through beautifully well, but actually we to sit with people, to be with people, to be praying silently, but to signpost them. And the psalmist says, or actually Patrick Regan says, before we go back to the psalm, he says we can make two mistakes when dealing with mental and emotional pain. One is we can refuse to take medication, and the other is that we only take medication. I'll just repeat that because I think it's really wise, and it's not me, it's Patrick Regan. He says, we can make two mistakes when dealing with mental and emotional pain. One is we refuse to take medication, so we don't acknowledge that it's physiological and that we might need that. And the other is that we only do that. Because actually, if we're believers in Jesus, and many, many of us here are, we know the power of prayer. We know that actually, when everything else fades away, we have the reality that prayer is the work, that prayer can help us, that we can call out as the psalmist is doing here, and that he will answer. And how he answers, well, what I like, he really is spiraling now. He's having a real pity party. He says, Lord, you have taken away my closest friends and made me repulsive to them. Now, that ever felt like that? I think there are times in our lives when we feel like that. And he's blaming God. We've all been there. He's blaming God for it. He's saying, I'm isolated. You've taken my close friends from me. But what is much more likely is that he has withdrawn. That he has withdrawn. Because one of the things, one of the signs of depression, one of the signs of our poor mental health is when we start to withdraw and not pick up. And actually, that is something with all of our friends, as we said last week, that actually we want to keep watch over our friends if they are withdrawing. And maybe his friends have moved because maybe they didn't know what to say. And so maybe they have moved as well. But nevertheless, he feels really isolated. This is what Dane Ortlund says. Our tendency is to feel the more difficult life gets, the more alone we are. We sink further into self-isolation, but the Bible corrects us. Our pain never outstrips what Jesus himself shares in. We are never alone. The sorrow that feels so isolating and unique was endured by him in the past and is shouldered by him in the present. And I love that at the end, that there is one who does get you more than anyone else in the world, and that is Jesus. That he has supernatural power to understand the bits of you that no one else can read or understand. That's who he is. That's what he does. And again, part of our training with grief is to say that actually no two journeys of grief look the same. And that is true because our grief is complex. But actually the one person, the one being that understands all of that complexity is Jesus. And if you're not a follower of Jesus today, maybe you're joining us online as Katie did, we are longing for you to find that breakthrough in the one who knows you and understands the hidden places in your heart, the brokenness, maybe even the layers of trauma that you will need some help with. In verse 12, the psalmist says, are your wonders known in this place of darkness? It's a beautiful question. Are your wonders known in this place of darkness, or your righteous deeds in the place of oblivion? Well, the answer is we can be that as church. We can be that. Just as last week we said, the Lord directs his love, and that can be us. Here too is an opportunity, because if someone is in darkness, and we were praying for this before the service, what they are looking for is a shaft of light. And we can bring that shaft of light. We can be that shaft of light in someone's pit, in someone's darkness, bringing hope, praying for healing, leading them towards medication or signposting towards GPs or counsellors, but being that light, bringing that answer in the darkness to be the light and to bring the light and comfort of Jesus. And in our New Testament reading that we went on, that Rachel read for us, we've seen the psalmist in meltdown, but bookended by faith. So right at the beginning and right at the end, but still in crisis. But now in the New Testament, we look at what Paul is saying, because the psalmist is saying, I'm hiding away over here. I'm hiding. I'm pushing it all down. But what Paul is saying is bring it all out, and actually we share in each other's sufferings together. And Jesus shares in our sufferings too. Paul went through so many struggles, so many hardships, and this is what he says. The Father of compassion and the God of all comfort, who comforts us in all our troubles, so that we can comfort those in any trouble with the comfort we ourselves have received from God. And when I was writing that slide, I was sort of reading, hang on, have I kept saying comfort there? Have I got too many comforts in? There are four. And there is a reason for that, because that is who our God is. He is the Comforter. The name for the Holy Spirit is Comforter, one of his many names. Comfort means to strengthen, fought, from that word fought, to bring strength. It's not empathy, sympathy, patting someone on the head over here. It's bringing strength, bringing hope, sitting with people, weeping with people, cooking for people in their time of need. He says that he has received something from God that is so precious in all of his trials that actually he knows that that is what has refined his intimacy with Jesus, as Katie reminded us so beautifully. Our suffering, although we wouldn't wish it on anyone, carves a larger place in our heart to love. It does. It increases our empathy for one another. If you've been in that pit and you meet someone else in that pit, you know how it feels. I remember someone saying to me, you will not always feel like you feel today. And when you're in the pit, the walls are so high, you think, well, I'm going to have to take your word for it because I'm in the pit here. But someone saying that to you, that you will not always be as you are today, that there is hope, that there is freedom, that they are praying for you, that they don't have all the answers, but they know a God who does and who loves you. In Gentle and Lowly, Dane Ortlund says this, if you are in Christ, you have a friend who in your sorrow will never just lob down a pep talk from heaven. He cannot bear to hold himself at a distance. Nothing can hold him back. His heart is too bound up in yours. I love that. Because he's not lobbing down a pep talk here for the psalmist or for Paul. And we're not doing that today. We're saying we are the broken shafts. We are the broken pieces that he is bringing together with his seams of gold, his grace, his mercy, his forgiveness. And God cannot hold his heart back from you. Whatever you've done, his love for you is unstoppable. We know that from Easter. We are Easter people. And what we have at Easter is the unstoppable love of Jesus Christ being killed and yet for us, for you and for me, overcoming death to be with us now and eternally. That is our God, not someone lobbing down a pep talk, but actually loving us, his heart so bound up in ours. And finally, as we come to respond, as a church, we want to do this better, as I said last week. We want to acknowledge that actually sometimes we do reach breaking point or we approach breaking point, but that we are a safe place, as Matt shared last week. That is our heart, to be a safe place that signposts you to the right hell, but also to Christ himself. Because really, church is a signpost, it is a sign of Jesus. It's a sign of a kingdom that, yes, still has brokenness because we're unfinished, but actually has beauty, has healing within it. And actually, we have a world that actually is longing to see the church, as we did last night and on Friday, beautifully, in our brokenness, in our struggles, coming together for good. So as a church, we want to do four things. We want to encourage each other to ask for help with no sense of shame and signpost people to appropriate help. And that's why we've put the details there. make space for lament and sorrow. And Ben's going to be sharing a little bit about how we can do that more in our worship spaces tomorrow evening with our leaders, so that I think we do that well here. I think I credit our worship team with that space for lament and the lyrics for that. But actually, lament is sorrow poured out, and we want to be able to do that as part of our worship. As followers of Jesus, we want to walk with each other in our brokenness and keep watch for one another. And finally, we want to point people to the only one who really gets us and gets it, gets the struggle, gets the pain. Isaiah 41 says, "Do not be afraid, for I am with you. Do not be discouraged, for I am your God. I will strengthen you and help you with my victorious right hand." This is his promise to us.